storytelling is the buzzword right now. I mean, whether it's social media or for corporate organizations, everybody's trying to tell their brand story and all that. And so it's because of that, though, everybody's telling stories and few are sticking, honestly, because it's a story doesn't mean it's going to be effective. If that's the case, there's a lot of movies that were complete duds that because they were a story, they should have been effective. If that's the case.
Helping church leaders amplify their impact and reach their communities. This is the Amplified Impact Podcast.
Hey, 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 digital communicators. This is the Amplified Impact Podcast, where we help church leaders amplify their impact and reach their communities. Hey, I'm your host, Johnny Flash. It's great to be with you all. This is episode 7, Effective Church Communication with Phil Bowdle. And you're going to really love this episode. We've got some great things in store for you. But before we jump in, I don't know about you, but the weather here has been amazing. It's been really beautiful here. I've been out mowing the lawn. My wife's been working in the garden. And my wife has a running path that she goes on. And it kind of, you have to go through the woods to sort of get to the neighborhood that we run in. And so my father-in-law let me use this trailer that we've been pulling around so I can put my zero turn mower on the tractor. And now instead of having to weed whack this path to get to this trail, I can mow it. And so I was like, oh, this will be great. Just the past weekend, I took my zero turn mower over there and I was mowing. I had it pretty much all done. I went to leave and I had to kind of go up this little bit of a hill. And there were some logs in the way, and so I had to go around them, and I got stuck. It was so bad because my wife was watching not only our 4 kids, but they each had a friend over, so there was 8 kids, and I had the family minivan. So she was stuck at home with the car, so she couldn't even come help me or anything. And so she ends up taking a trek through the woods with 8 kids on an adventure in order to come rescue me, and our neighbor came and helped and stuff. And it was kind of comical now looking back at it. It wasn't when I was stuck there trying to get out for like an hour and I just could not get back to where I had parked the trailer to get my zero turn home. But anyways, hopefully you're enjoying this good weather. It's been really nice here. And the good news is my zero turn is no longer stuck. So I'll be more careful next time. Hey, if you didn't know, there's a video version of this podcast where you can see the image of me stuck with the zero turn stuck and everything. So make sure you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Go watch the video on amplifiedimpact.org. You can get all the show notes there as well. Also, over on the website, you'll see we published a new article recently with the top free stock photo websites. Because there's a whole bunch of them out there. And sometimes, you know, obviously it's always best to use an original photo to take photo of your own people and that kind of thing as much as possible. But sometimes you're doing a design or something, or you need have a blog post or something, and you just need a stock image and maybe you don't want to pay for it. So there's a whole bunch of free stock images, but we've gone through over 100 free stock photo websites and have picked out the best ones so that you can save time and find good quality images. So check out that article while you're on the website. I think you'll find that list of top websites really helpful as well. Well, as I mentioned, Phil has a wealth of information. I think you're really going to enjoy this episode. So let's get right to it. Phil Bowdle is the creative arts pastor at Westridge Church in Atlanta, Georgia, and he speaks at conferences, he blogs, he just has such a passion for the church that I really appreciate. And so here's my conversation with Phil. Hey, Phil, thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, John. Appreciate it.
Hey, so tell a little bit for people that don't know you, why don't you just give a background of what you do, where you're at, what you've been up to?
Yeah, I am in Northwest Atlanta at a church called Westridge Church. I've been here for 7 years. I got my start here as the communications director, came in and kind of built that team and department, started overseeing the video aspects of that as well. And my overall, though, my passion has always been telling one story through everything you communicate. And so over the last 3 years, I've stepped into the creative arts pastor role. And so at our church, what that looks like, that means that I oversee our department of anything creative that involves, you know, worship, production, media, and communications. So we kind of serve as a central service to our whole church, but as a ministry to our whole church as well. So it's a blast. I love getting to do what I get to do. It's fun.
And give our listeners an idea, how many staff and volunteers approximately are kind of in your area of ministry?
In our area, it's about 12 staff, full and part-time. And then volunteers, it's over 100.
Okay.
Awesome. That are make up over all those four areas of our team. Yeah.
And are you guys multi-site down there or one?
We are not. Okay. We are a church planting church. So we've done that before, but our heart's more into planting and sending out new churches and helping even send out our people to those. So that's more of our lane right now.
Cool. Yeah. No, that's awesome. Well, hey, I know that you have grown up in the church as I have. And, you know, we were talking before we started rolling the camera here about just, you know, growing up, and it was just so different, you know, 20, 30 years ago. I grew up with the flannel board, you know, Sunday school when I was a kid, you know, and it was like the teacher would put up the little flannel board things and tell the stories. And it's just, stuff has changed so much. And what, how have you seen things change from your perspective?
Oh man. I mean, especially in the area where I do ministry, I mean, the communications director used to be the pastor's assistant, you know, that was doing the bulletin each week. The video wasn't really even a part of the picture. Worship hadn't changed a whole lot in that section. And we've obviously seen a lot of changes within the last couple decades there in how worship is done. And so the way that church happens now, not only has it changed, but there are so many new resources and opportunities we have at our disposal now that give us a whole different way and a whole different playbook to be able to do ministry. But at the same time, the challenge and the burden I have is that I see so many churches that are still using the same playbook they had 20 to 30 years ago. And that playbook isn't going to work anymore because a lot has changed in that time.
Yeah, no, I think you're totally right. I mean, I've been working with a church out in Michigan who is trying to kind of turn that corner because the church has been shrinking. You know, it used to be 700-800 people on the weekend. Now it's just a few hundred, and they've kind of been doing things the way that they've been doing them for a long, long time. And so their congregation's getting older. They're not able to reach people. So I think this is a timely subject. So let's kind of unpack some of these areas that you mentioned. You know, with the worship service, how have you seen with things change, you know, and how have you adapted, whether it's at your church or just what you've seen churches doing to reach people now versus, you know, maybe before?
Yeah, I mean, I think 30 years ago, people were attending church in a very different way. I mean, most people were coming almost every week or much more frequently. Now, the more that we get a better grasp of who's coming to our church may look a little bit different than others, but I know a lot of other churches that I'm talking to and hearing from, the average attendance is not 3 to 4 times a month. It's more 1 to 2 times a month. And so that alone changes everything. Because I see, you know, things that we're trying to consider now that we're actively talking about and our team is, how would we communicate differently if we knew that the people we're trying to reach are coming 12 times a year, one time a month? How does that change the songs that we sing? How frequently we do those songs? How does that change how we communicate? If it's something that's so important that we want everybody to know, we can't communicate it once on one Sunday and assume that everybody's going to know it. So there are so many things that we need to change and tailor for and change how we communicate because the people that we're reaching are different. You know, I think 30 years ago, too, there were not near as many things competing for everybody's soul attention. And now that's the most valuable commodity we have is somebody's attention. So when we think about that in the context of our services, we know a lot of the thing that I see is a lot of churches are basing their communication strategy and basing their services around the assumption, the bold assumption, that they actually have their audience's soul attention, when that's just not the reality, unfortunately. I mean, I think that my favorite stat is that the average goldfish has an attention span of 9 seconds and people have an attention span of 8 seconds. So It's easy to talk to a room thinking that everybody's soaking up every word, but the reality is that's the attention that we have of the people that we get to steward is a valuable commodity, and we got to handle that with as good stewards of everything that we're communicating, because everything we do communicates, every song, every announcement, every story we share, everything we do communicates. So it's a huge burden that we have in the church, no matter what the role is that you play, whether you're staff or volunteer, that we get to play a part in helping make these things connect and tell the story of what God's doing in and through our church.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the things that you all are doing either at Westridge or you see other churches doing that's helping steward that attention, whether it's, you know, the announcements, the song selection, the storytelling, yeah. Like, let's unpack that a little bit.
Yeah, I'll start with announcements. Like, nobody goes to church for your announcements. If you think as a staff member, it's easy to be thinking about, oh, we've got to announce this, we got to share this. As a pastor, you have the burden of wanting people to show up on Sunday, show up to your events. The reality is, though, nobody is walking out of your service and nobody's being talking about in the you know, narthex or the atrium or whatever, yeah, in your church saying the announcements were amazing today. You know, like nobody's saying that. So the thing that we're really trying to do as a church is build some standards around what we're going to communicate from stage. And really, those are the standards not only we use for stage communication, but really across the board, from social media, from our website, from what our creative team is putting the most of our energy into. And so we really try to figure out for each week of the year, what are the one to two things that we want everybody in our church to know, whether they're here on Sunday or they're connecting with us on social media that week. We want the messaging to be the same. And so that means that for us as a creative team, I can tell anybody on our team through video and worship and production and communications to say, hey, here's our focus area for what we're communicating as a church over this week. And also, I mean, we're mapped out through the end of the year so that we can be mapping out stories and ways to connect the things that we're communicating as a church in a lot more strategic way than saying every week on Monday, all right, what are we announcing this Sunday, Pastor? What do you want to share? You know, so we're able to be more strategic about what we communicate and how we communicate that. But more importantly, we have time to map out the why behind what we're communicating. It's easy to say things from stage and lose sight of knowing that everybody's filtering the things that you're communicating through. Why should I care? Like this. So we really try as a team to be advocating for the people in our audience and trying to answer the questions that they're asking and try to connect with them in a way that we can connect with them to help them take their next step in their walk with Christ. So that even impacts the songs that we do. If we've tried to limit our playlist more strategically in seasons. So, looking at each probably three blocks in the year of January to January through May, June and July over our summer months, and then August through November. And looking at what songs are we strategically trying to communicate and share as a church so that we're not doing the same song every week, but they're seeing some repetition, and those people that are coming one or two times a month, they're not walking in every time to church saying, okay, I've never heard any of these songs.
Right, a whole new playlist. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's without being careful, it's easy for the worship leader or the pastor to say, man, I'm sick of these songs, you know, and stuff. But the reality is, if people are coming less frequently, it puts more emphasis on making sure that we're walking them through the songs that we're sharing and singing corporately as a church.
Yeah.
So it changes how we do that stuff.
Well, sorry to jump in. I was just going to say that, you know, I know when we put on worship services, right, like I play bass guitar. And so I think it's easy for the worship band to get tired of the songs before everybody else does, right? Because we rehearse them. We have a rehearsal before the service. We do a lot of times multiple services. And so we've done the song like 5, 6, 7 times, plus all the rehearsal at home, you know, and then we get tired of these songs and people have only heard them maybe once that month, like if they were even there on that week, right? So
exactly.
I think that's huge.
Yeah, I mean, it changes how we even plan, knowing that we're thinking about it kind of in those three chunks in the year. It allows us to think strategically about what's the best time to share this song. When that song What a Beautiful Name came out from Hillsong, we were holding on to it for a while, even though it came out I think at the end of last year, we're like, this is, we want to build around this for Easter. We want to do a lot of moments and kind of build momentum around that song. So knowing that we were planning around that time of the year, it gave us some time to think strategically about that and be able to build momentum around a song instead of every week being a week into itself. You know, I think the burden I have for the church as well too, is that most church leaders that I talk to, are not super content with how they plan. I mean, and most staff people that I talk to are completely overwhelmed by the lack of planning. And it's almost like a newspaper, company of every day that they're putting a newspaper out every, you know, after every paper's out the next day, they're like, all right, what's our systems for how we're going to do this? How we're going to do the paper this next day? And it's really, I mean, we have 52 rhythms every single year to do what we do in a healthy, good way. And so, I think it's important for us as church leaders to lead well and plan well so that we can engage more people on our staff and volunteers and do that in a healthy way. And that fits within every communications, worship, the sermon planning, all that stuff. It's critical to set our team up for success and how we do that.
What would you say? Because I think you're right. I think there's people listening that are like, wow, they have a whole year of announcements or sermon topics or whatever planned out, you know, and a lot of people listening are probably the ones that desire to have more of that planned out, but maybe, you know, they're not quite an authority to make that decision or they have to get other people on board. What are some ways that you've been able to see people lead in that area of more planning, more thoughtfulness, you know, thinking ahead?
A couple of things. One, you're not going to change you can add value to your pastor or senior leader, but you're not probably going to change them. Mm-hmm. And so what often happens in that is that people give up hope of, oh, my pastor doesn't like to plan, when the reality is he may not have the time to put some of the groundwork together to be able to plan. And so the key, I think, is to be able to figure out whatever your organizational structure is to figure out where can you add value to the process. For me, early on, when I came into Westridge as communications director, I was trying to churn out series designs within like a week and try to create a promo plan really fast because we didn't really have the rhythm in place to plan out ahead. And so for me, the area that I started to see an opportunity for is, hey, me just kind of raising my hand saying, hey, would you mind if I put together a calendar meeting request for us to be able to sit down, you know, about once a month to be able to talk about what's coming up? And funny thing is, they said yes, and we were able to start building a proactive plan around just getting everybody in the room that needs to talk about this to get it on the calendar and to put that plan in place. We didn't know every outline for every message. We didn't need to, but we got enough overview to be able to execute our ministry well and plan accordingly. So it all really started with just saying, adding value in one specific area that helped everything else start to fall into place, and then just start to get chip away at every step to be able to make it more effective and stuff. But you know, like I said, though, you can't change your pastor. I want to walk into every single week and just have my own, you know, come into every week unto itself and just kind of plan on Monday, then release the burden and the expectations you have for yourself of trying to make every week incredible and every design incredible and everything like that for every week. The reality is, if that's the case, then build your expectations around that instead of fighting that and work from there. But again, just figure out where you can add value to the process.
Yeah. No, I think that's good. It's amazing how having a deadline or a meeting even gets the pastor who wouldn't normally have the time to think about it or whatever, but if they know they're going to be in the room with the church leaders,
exactly,
and they have to talk about what we're going to do next month or the following month or whatever, then they do spend some time, even if it's kind of at the last minute, even if it's the day before that meeting or whatever, you know, and I think that those deadlines do help a lot. So I noticed on your website that you guys have, you know, a story on there, and you guys are really into stories and telling stories. Yeah. Let's talk about that a little bit and kind of how you're doing that, what you're seeing is working now versus before, and so on.
Yeah, storytelling is the buzzword right now. I mean, whether it's social media or for corporate organizations, everybody's trying to tell their brand story and all that. And so it's because of that, though, everybody's telling stories and few are sticking, honestly, because just because it's a story doesn't mean it's going to be effective. If that's the case, there's a lot of movies that were complete duds that because they were a story, they should have been effective. That's not the case. And so for churches, when I talk to a lot of people, I hear them saying, I want to tell a story about small groups, or I want to tell a story about life change here. And what we tend to gravitate to are the most sensational stories, the ones that are the most radical of like, it's the small group that is that somebody in their small group is in the hospital on their deathbed, and everybody gathers around them, and they pray over them, and they're healed, and that's the story we share, and that's the reason why everybody should get involved in small groups. When the reality is, I think the key to storytelling is what I'm learning is that the best stories really are simple, and they tell a story of somebody overcoming a barrier that they can relate to. So it's not about what you're trying to tell as a church, it's how you're trying to connect with the people in the seats. And so if you're trying to communicate value around your small groups, the best thing that you can do is say, okay, if I want to help people get involved in small groups, and I want to tell a story around that, well, what are some of the barriers that are getting in the way from people getting involved in small groups? Well, it's probably things like busyness, or saying, oh, that's weird, I don't want to sit around in a circle in a living room with a bunch of people I don't know, or things like that. So for things like that, our approach is less around what's the most sensational story we've ever heard from small groups. And it's more, hey, who's somebody that said, hey, I'm too busy, or I don't want to be in small groups, that's not my thing. And who's somebody that walked through and overcame that barrier and is now experiencing life change through that? And so the difference is, I remember that was the scenario we did like 3 or 4 years ago when I was really trying to study this. And it was incredible because the story we shared, it was good. It was effective. It was done with excellence, but it certainly wasn't sensational and anything. It wasn't going to get, 200,000 views on YouTube, but it increased our small group engagement like crazy that over that season of engagement in small groups. And so many people said, man, that video, that's me. I'm saying it, I'm too busy. I feel like it might be weird, but if I relate so much to that couple that was talking about that in the story. And so again, the key is to tell stories that people can relate to and share stories of people overcoming barriers that they see themselves in. And so that's what we spend most of our time on in stories. And really that's our key promotional tactic. It's not about the most compelling announcement strategy or the coolest graphic. It's telling stories that people say that's me. That's where I need to, they have something that I don't have, or they're experiencing something I'm experiencing. I need what they have. So that's what we focus the most on for storytelling.
And for your call to action, are you combining that with a live person before or after that video, or are you tagging it on to the end of the story? Yeah. or how are you doing that most of the time?
Usually there's four components of every story that we're trying to identify, and that's what's the problem we're trying to solve, or what's the problem they were trying to solve, what was the solution that they found through that, what's their overall story in a sentence. And what's the call to action for them, for the people watching? Those are the four questions we're trying to answer for every story. So for the problem, that was, I'm too busy, but I don't have community in my life. For the solution is, once I got involved in our small groups, we started to grow in our faith. We got to grow in community with others. The story in a sentence was, I'm too busy, but I was once too busy, but now I'm experiencing life change in small groups. And the call to action is, hey, if that's you, then here's how you can sign up for getting engaged in a small group. So that helps us build our strategy around that to refine the story. Everybody's story doesn't fit neatly in a 4-minute video.
Yeah.
So it's up to us as a ministry to be able to kind of focus in and tailor on that story to make sure it's going to best relate to the people we're sharing the story with.
And are you finding the stories to be most engaging filming them, like where the people are, where the small group is, or do you have them coming to the church, or are you kind of mix it up? What have you been doing
it
for that?
It really depends. I mean, we don't have one standard room or setup or anything like that. We try to look at what best tells that individual story. I mean, there's sometimes where we've done it where it's somebody we're capturing somebody more as a voiceover because they're not great on camera communicating, but they have a really compelling story. So we're showing B-roll the whole time and we're having them do a voiceover. That's best for that story. But others, they're a super good communicator. We've done a pre-interview with them and we know that they're going to be effective in that. So we want them talking directly to the camera so that it feels like they're talking directly to the audience. So it really just depends on what it is, but we try to say what's going to best tell this individual story instead of trying to get it to fit into our mold of what we do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the last area I just wanted to kind of pick your brain on, because I think this is what everyone's talking about, is the social media and the engagement and how to really leverage that in 2017 versus, you know, I mean, it didn't even really exist a decade ago, more or less 30 years ago, you know? So, well, what are you guys doing? What's working? What tips do you have there?
Well, I mean, the average church is still using social media like a bullhorn instead of using it as it's designed, and that's to engage with people. It's a relational tool. It's not a advertising tool. Sure, you can use it for advertising, but the potential in social media is the stories that we can tell, the people we can connect with, the two-way conversations we can have. And so the three aspects we're trying to do with social media at Westridge are three things. We're trying to inspire people. We're trying to engage people and we're trying to encourage people. And within that, we're trying to inform them with next steps that we can help people with, that would help them take their next step with their walk with Christ. So the tendency is, if without a strategy to engage and connect with people and encourage people, the tendency gets to, okay, what did we put in our bulletin this week? And that's what we'll just copy that text and post it on there. And it becomes a bullhorn instead of a way to be able to tell stories around what we're trying to do as a church. So, you know, for us, we're really intentional about what people experience when they see our posts. We want them to feel like a sense of engagement and like warmth, and we want them to see our people. So we do very few graphics on there because I don't go on Facebook or Instagram to see people's graphics. Like, nobody does that. Yeah. And so we really try to our goal is we want to build a social media platform that we ourselves would want to engage with. So we try to have fun too. We'll do goofy videos and try to help be the best authentic version of our church and our leadership as we can be, because that's what people are going to connect with. You know, nobody's going on social media to connect with what people are announcing that day. So finding unique ways to encourage people where they're at, inspire them with what's going on in your church, but also just things that would add value to their lives. Like, that's what we're trying to focus on as much as we can, and do that through the perspective of our people, not through our staff.
And so you're doing videos and stuff that are you doing Facebook Live or just videos tailored for social media, or are you kind of recycling videos used in another way, like shorter versions? Kind of what's it look like?
Yeah. All the above. Okay. I mean, it really depends on the the platform. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you can't treat Facebook like Twitter, you can't treat Twitter like Instagram. You know. So, but one thing I would say that we have changed is, more often than not, we're thinking about through our video content and our communication strategy, how would this work on social media? How would this be something I myself would want to share on my feed? And that's really the filter we try to use, because if it's not, then it probably isn't going to connect on Sunday morning. It's probably not going to connect on social media anyway. With the algorithms for Facebook, they're probably never even going to see it. So if it's not something we ourselves would want to share. And we're also trying to think through, especially for video, more so we're thinking just as much about would it work on social media as would it work on Sunday morning. Because we had a video at Easter. We shared a story on there. And in our services, about 10,000 people saw it that were here at our Easter services. But online, it's like 50 or 60,000 people. So we've extended the reach on that far more outside of our walls than inside. And so that means a lot of the stories and the video that we're doing, we're trying to really be careful about how that story is going to translate on social media, and using that to lean into how it's going to work in the services. Just as much, you know. So it has changed our perspective a lot, but we're seeing the fruits of that in both environments. The things that we feel like, oh, that's only going to work on social media, are the things that we're realizing, hey, that's actually working better in our services before. And I think that would be the encouragement too, is there's a lot of things that for all the churches and leaders engaging right now and listening in is that there may be some things that you can just do on social media that aren't on services that are actually going to reach more people. They're going to connect with more people than are going to be there on Sunday morning. So the thing about social media is it's a ministry tool. It's not just a communications tool. But you have to use it and think of it like that. So if you can use social media like ministry, you can extend the reach broader than you ever could have imagined. And you can do that in incredible ways for your church that still tell a story of what God's doing in your church.
No, those are great. I think those are great filters. I like the inspire, the engage, and the encourage, you said, and the filter of just, you know, how is this going to work, this video content or whatever, how's it going to work on social media versus in the service, kind of thinking that through ahead of time versus getting to the end. You have this finished video and you're like, oh, wow, we should have done it a little bit differently for it to work well on social media or whatever. So I think those are great, great insights. Well, hey, I want to move on to our Amplified Impact speed round. So I'm going to fire off a few questions. You can just kind of give short answers here, sort of what comes to mind. So what's the first thing that you would say any new church communicator director needs to know?
Oh, good question. I would say that the tendency is you want to focus on just advocating for the staff, and the best communication leaders advocate for their audience first. So thinking everything through, what does my audience need? How do they need it? How can I best communicate to them? And then translate that through the staff second.
That's great. I love that. What's the best thing that you've done to attract new visitors to your church, or one of the best things that you've done?
Oh man, we try to use a number of tactics. One thing we did, we found in our church, there were a ton of people that live within driving range of our church, but a lot of people that don't drive the direction of our church, so they don't know we are here. So over the last couple of years, we did a thing called Lights at Westridge, and it was basically a free Christmas light experience on the front of our building that just went crazy over just decorating it and syncing that up to about 15-minute light show, and saw like, you know, 12 to 15,000 people come through each year. Our attendance grew like crazy with new people coming in right after that. But the problem we were trying to solve is what would be something that would get people to actually walk through our church and connect with us that otherwise wouldn't. So that was super successful for us. We enjoyed that.
To even know that your church is there, right? Because they show up, they hear about this light show, they show up, and it's like, oh, I didn't even know there was a church here, right?
Exactly.
That's cool. Exactly. That's cool. Yep. Let's see. Do you have any, I know we talked about sermon series planning and stuff, but do you have any tips for promoting sermon series?
Yeah, not every series is a felt need series. You know, sometimes it's a book study or, you know, it's a character study, but every series should speak to a felt need or a problem that's going to be solved for their audience, for the audience you're trying to reach. So figure out the problem you're trying to solve with every series and use that to drive your communication strategy for how you're communicating that and building awareness around that service, or start your message off that way to know, here's what I'm trying to help solve in your life, or here's what the scripture is going to be able to solve in your life.
That's good. That's good. What's your favorite tool or app for ministry?
Oh man. There's so many. The thing that keeps my brain alive in a lot of ways and getting things done is an app called Things by a company called Cultured Code. And so that's how I get everything I do done for myself. So I can schedule out tasks in the future. That's how I organize everything I do and keep reminders in place and all that stuff. So it's more of a personal thing like that, but it's critical for my workflow on how I get things done.
It's so funny that you mentioned that, because I just started using it like a few weeks ago. I had been using Wunderlist before to kind of do some of that stuff, but I'd heard about Things, and so I've been using it. I really like it.
Yeah, here's the game changer about it for me is that I can, if I'm not careful, like I really like my inbox to be at zero, which is dangerous for me. And so what I try to do is instead of just answering every email that comes in, I'll put it into, if it's actionable, I'll put it into a task, and I'll drag that email into the notes feature of Things. And that way I can treat that email like a task. And so so that helps me keep from spending all day in email and not getting the big, more important things done than I need to. So it kind of puts everything in priority in that way. So that it's critical for me. I don't know what I do without
it. That's cool. I'm going to give that dragging the email feature a try. I haven't tried that. So I'm going to I'm going to try that. Cool. Well, hey, this has been great. Tell folks, I know we want to just pick your brain some more, but what's the best way to connect with you?
Yeah, you can any number of ways. You can connect with me on email. You can email me at phil@philbowdle.com, phil@philbowdle.com. So feel free to email me, or you can connect with me on Twitter @philbowdle, or on Facebook, just search my name, or you can find out a lot of the stuff we talked about. I've blogged around these topics as well at philbowdle.com, and you can connect with me there if you want. I do some one-on-one coaching as well, so you can find more information about that on my website.
Cool. Hey, and I didn't mention this at the beginning, but you know, I was talking to Brewster a couple months back on the podcast, and he was like, "You've got to talk to Phil." And so here we are talking, which is pretty cool.
Here we are.
Is there Bruce someone is that you would recommend that I interview on the podcast next, and why would you recommend them?
Well, I would have said Brewster's a good friend of mine, so I would have said him if I didn't know that he said that. Since you've already interviewed him, oh man, there's a lot of great people. Dave Adamson at North Point is killing it in social media. Mark McDonald is a good friend of mine. That he just wrote a book called Be Known for Something. That is an incredible communication strategy and great need for the church. So both those guys would be great.
Okay, cool. Thanks so much. Well, hey, thanks again for coming on the podcast. Really appreciate the time and the insights. I know it's going to be helpful for the churches listening. So thanks so much.
Hey, thanks so much.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Phil as much as I did. Hey, be sure to reach out to him. Go to his website. He's got some great blog entries on there that just have some great insights I think you'll find really helpful. Hit his website at philbowdle.com. You can, if you don't know how to spell it, just go to amplifiedimpact.org. All the links are on the show notes page there. Reach out to him on Twitter. Follow him. Send him a message. Tell him how much you appreciate his time and his insights. That would be huge. And hope that you'll subscribe in iTunes, and you can check out the video on the website, as I mentioned. So, hey, this has been great. Looking forward to another interview coming up here soon. Until then, amp it up.